Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and boy, have we got a topic today for you. Control. Ho-ho! Man, oh man, have you ever had a boss, a loved one, a friend, someone that just loves to always tell you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, what color it should be, et cetera, et cetera? Boy, I can. This topic we're going to be talking about today, we have a fabulous guest, Daniel Miller. His publication is titled, Losing Control, Finding Serenity. So if you have had a day where maybe you'd like to punch somebody's lights out because if they say one more suggestion to you about how you could do something better, you say, they're dead meat. Well, sit back, relax, take a breather, because we're going to find out how you can get over that stuff. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I think you were describing me about 30 years ago. That's just exactly the way I was. I definitely relate to it.
Oh, my goodness. I can tell you I have had people in my life that have done that. And it just, you reach a point where you think, if they say one more word, I'm going to give them five, but not the five they expect. They're going to get it. It's going to be, then you ought to just punch their mental lights out so that they'll turn it off. Daniel, you're a man, you've had so many wonderful accomplishments professionally, but you just made a statement. You said, gee, Donna, what you just said, that sounds like me 30 years ago. Okay,
well, right.
You've got to share that with my listeners.
Controllers could be very successful, you know, on an external basis. You know, like sort of, we're the type A people. We're very disciplined, hardworking, and so we can accomplish a lot. And I did, at a very young age. I taught at UCLA. I wrote a best-selling book on real estate investments and just a lot of things, but what I wasn't successful at is I never had any sense of well-being at my core. In other words, I didn't feel accomplished, even though I was. I was always worrying about the what-ifs and what could happen and what might be's. And that's what controllers are always dealing with. They're obsessing about those things. And you can't let go when you're in that mindset. And that was me. That was me.
That is something that it just absolutely astonishes me. And there are those people, when they want to control, they'll have those subtleties. I think of a young woman whose mother wanted to control her all the time, and she'd say, oh, well, nobody's ever going to want you because you're too fat, or you're going to, you know, they have these digs that they will put into people.
Right. You're raising a very interesting point. You know, to be a controller, you don't have to be aggressive. Or even loud, it can be very subtle, like putting, like you say, the guilt trip on someone, dealing with them more mentally to make them feel bad. So, the type of control varies, you know, so much. But as I say, recommending something more than once or giving your opinion more than once it becomes controlling at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so many ways it can be done. And believe me, I know them all. and the difference is, you know, I'm still a controller. I call myself a reformed controller.
Oh,
because,
I
always have to work at it. And so now I catch myself. Or if I don't, my family sure does and says, Danny, you're the one who wrote that book. You got to read your own book. So So I have that. But I'm so much better. My life is so much better. So more much at ease, and I don't have the worries or the anxieties or the fears that I used to have. And it really comes from loosening the reins, you know, letting go a little bit and letting life's natural current sort of flow and then reacting and responding more in an intuitive way rather than a resisting or an insisting or a demanding way.
Daniel, I can recall having been at so many different seminars. And you people would have this rah, rah, rah attitude. And, boy, this is the only way you got to do stuff. And I would reach a point where I go, you know, that just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work for me. And you get caught up in all of this. Do you think people in general really are aware of how the controlling factor is so prevalent? I mean, it's everywhere.
It's a very good question. I don't think so. You know, we're not aware of, you know, how many different ways we control. You know, I like to ask a series of questions like, you know, do you believe that if you help clear the clutter from your mate's room, that's going to result on your mate being neater? Or do you believe in harping at someone to not drink so much or to eat healthier food, that's going to result in their eating healthier food or not drinking? Or giving your opinion more than once is going to have a greater chance of it being followed? You know, and those are types of controlling things that people don't see and they're not aware of. And, and in my case, I was so unaware of it. I mean, I knew I was controlling, but I didn't know was the harm it was causing me and my family, my close ones, until I got to the point, in my case, I had a series of wake-up calls, and the last one was a very serious wake-up call. It was waking up in this white, cold, sterile room with people around a bed, and a doctor saying, Danny, I need your permission before we can go further. And that was the doctor Kirianov, because I had been under surgery for 5 hours on something that was supposed to take 20 minutes. I had skin cancer on the tip of my nose. Now, as a controller, I missed appointments. You know, I was just too busy on other things. And anyways, I ended up having a series of like 5 surgeries for removal of cancer. And
wow. You know,
at that point, that was about the 5th wake-up call. But this wake-up call brought me to my knees, and my only choice was to surrender in all ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my life began to change, because what happened when I surrendered, I got a glimpse of a different way of living. You know, when I returned to work after the first series of operations 3 months later, the thing I couldn't help but notice is things were going okay without all my help. I wasn't as important as I thought. You know, I couldn't help seeing that, and then that just sort of led to, at the house too, is I started listening more instead of, you know, advising and telling my children what's best for them. You know, my son, I gave my opinion so much to my son, as he got older, he got very dismissive and didn't want to hear from me, you know. And as a controller, if someone doesn't want to listen to you, that's one of the worst things that can happen. Well, later, years later, I stopped doing that. And the interesting, now that he's a young adult, Donna, the interesting thing is he now comes to me and, Papa, I have this problem at work. Can you help me with it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he would never do that before. So it just it allows people to relax and be themselves, and it opens communications. And then that's why I say you really can gain control of your life by being willing to lose control in your life. And it's so true in so many different areas.
I think in our world, and I don't know that our world is much different from the worlds of the past, because human beings are what they are. But
yes.
Don't you feel that the control issue is really taught in many respects? I know we have personality types, but don't you think it's really taught by our society?
I not only taught, it's just immersed in us and around us from the time we're children. Who are more controlling than our parents as young children? Our parents, that's what they do. They control. Now, most of that's good. I mean, you know, parents need to instill moral values, discipline, education, health and safety, things like that. But they often go beyond that, where they're overmanaging, you know, their children's lives. Teachers are controlling. Religion could be very controlling, and of course, politics is nothing but control. About, you know,
right,
manipulating us and trying to. So what I'm saying is, we are brought up in that environment, as you suggest, and we get so used to it, we feel that's what we need to do. We feel that's the only thing that will work. That's the only thing that will get us what we think we need or we feel we need. So we don't stop to consider that there may be another way. I'm working half the time now by being willing to give up some control at my work, and I'm making at least as much or more.
Wow.
Because when you're too controlling, it can be non-productive. You can go down blind alleys. You can easily be diverted. You can do too much. And you lose the focus and clarity that you have when you're willing to give up control. I like to talk about it, controlling actions is like the intensity of controlling actions and control patterns is it puts blinders on us. And we're unable to recognize the options and the choices that we actually have that could really improve our lives. And when you let go of control, it's like taking off those blinders, and mm-hmm. you have so much more clarity. And you're also more grounded mm-hmm. so that you can make those choices that are really and truly better for us.
You have a quote in your book by Albert Einstein that I really liked, and you said it was in the Saturday Evening Post in October 26, 1929. Everything is determined, the beginning as well as the end, by forces over which we have no control. It is determined for insects as well as for the stars. Human beings, vegetables are cosmic dust. We all dance to an invisible, mysterious tune, intoned in the distance by an invisible piper. Einstein was considered one of the most brilliant people that has ever been on this planet. And
no question.
For him to make a statement like that, you go,
Yeah, it gives you pause, because here in science, you need to be disciplined, and you do have to be controlling as far as like your experiments and tests, et cetera, et cetera. But he's seeing that other side of control, and it's that control that's mainly triggered by our fears and our anxieties and our strong emotions. So it's fascinating, and that's why I chose that quote, that here's such a brilliant person, and he clearly recognizes that there are so many things that we really can't control.
Mm-hmm.
And he expresses it so beautifully, as you quoted.
I think that's true. Now, you made a point in your book that I think is significant. You say losing control does not mean totally regulating your skills and talents to others or being unprepared to handle important tasks. And that is a very important point, because you talk about surrendering, releasing. And let's go into that a little bit, because that's
an excellent point. I'm glad you raised that, Donna. What it really comes down to is finding the balance between control and surrender. Okay, each of us, I think, has it maybe in a different place, but I think most of us were slanted too much toward the control. So it's not like totally relinquishing everything. It's not laissez-faire. It's not being laid back. You can be very assertive. It's really more of, I would like to say, the going with the flow or the currents of life, and acting in a way in which it feels right. In other words, you can apply your talents and your skills when it intuitively feels the best time to do it, rather than keep pressuring and keep pushing and keep forcing. And that's really what I'm trying to say, is we need to find that balance. And usually, that type of control, the harmful type of control, it's usually triggered by our fears and our angers and our resentments. So mm-hmm. if we can address those, and I write extensively about that in the book, if we can address those and diffuse those, then we're automatically going to stop controlling as much. And we're going to be able to find that balance that's right for each of us.
Mm-hmm. You had an experience with a friend by the name of Ethan. And I really like
yeah.
this story.
Yeah.
Because it is very important about recognizing the difference in people. Tell Ethan's story.
Thank you. Yes, Ethan was my closest friend. He was a friend that when I separated from my first wife, he took me in. He helped take care of me. And I know him for many years, but yet Ethan... Don, did you ever have a friend that just drives you nuts with their idiosyncrasies? Well, he was one of those. There were certain things he did that was really could really get to you. And he had one thing, is that he refused to have an answering machine, so that I couldn't get a hold of him to leave messages or to change our plans. And I kept harping at him, Ethan, you're controlling everything. I can't get a hold of you. You can get a hold of me, et cetera, et cetera. And he made this comment, well, Danny, you can always call me. Just you can get a hold of me at work. And when he said that, so, you know, cavalierly, I just sort of went off and I just harped. And, well, Ethan stopped talking to me for 3 years. 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're good friends now simply because what happened was we have common friends, so there were social gatherings in which we had a talk. But what really happened is I realized how his good qualities. He was compassionate, he was caring, he was giving. I was focusing on the things I didn't like about him, and I was trying to change those things. And instead of focusing on what made him a good friend, and once I changed that, Don, once I started focusing on that, it became very easy for me. All I had to do was not to make any plans with him where I might need to reach him.
Mm-hmm.
Real simple. So I made the adjustment. And with that adjustment, we don't see each other nearly as much. We're seeing each other actually going to an art museum next week.
Mm-hmm.
But when we see each other, we're closer than ever, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's always accepted me, and hey, who doesn't have their quirks and idiosyncrasies? You know,
that's true.
The controllers have a lot of trouble with that. So the point of that story, and I agree with it, is very important. It's so important that we accept our friends and our loved ones as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, it breeds nothing but dissension and conflict. And
I think that's a very good point. Very good point. Everyone has their positives and negatives. Some people have some real good negatives, but heck, we wouldn't have anything to talk about if it wasn't that way.
Right. You have choices, but. You know, the negatives, there's so many things. If we bring the attention to ourselves, sort of like, okay, I can't change this person, but what can I change? Well, there's some things in me that I can change. My reactions, my responses, you know, my not being open-minded enough. Maybe I'm not humble enough. So, you know, it's important to look as to what our role is in this thing, in our relationships. And whether it's close friends like Ethan, whether it's our loved ones, whether it's our children, it's the same dynamic. It's so important to accept people as they are. It's important to accept to accept life as it is. I like to say, you know, my life philosophy now is sort of like, you know, let go of control and accept life as it is. Because life... Oh, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go ahead. Finish what you were going
to say. Because, you know, life is constantly moving. The ebbs and flows and shifting and... You know, if you try to control life, you're like, you know, you're trying to hold it tight. It's sort of like you're trying to grip a really fast-moving conveyor belt, okay? When that happens, you're either going to get burned or you're going to get dragged along. And that's the same thing that happens when we try to control life excessively.
And, boy, it can drive you nuts when you try to do it. There are things sometimes that you're just not able to control, and there are times that you have to be decisive about making decisions about how you're going to position yourself in association with certain people. And it's many times I think we will realize we made a mistake maybe in working with someone or depending on them for certain things because we didn't take the time to look deeply enough into perhaps resourcing or researching the resources behind the individual. And we've all done that.
Sure.
And then we keep kicking ourselves because we go, oh, that was so stupid. Now, maybe the person isn't a bad person, but they maybe are just not a competent individual. So saying we need to detach from this because it's not serving either one of our interests well. But you
look at all
of the things that go on today, the litigations, the anger, the stuff that you often will hear on and see on television and on radio and on YouTube and all kinds of stuff, and you go, my goodness, if I buy into all of this, I'm going to feel like I don't have any control over anything. And then you go into that point of, am I a victim, which nobody needs to be in. That's not a position that empowers you. Let's talk about the personal truth. You say we need to embrace personal truths. What are you talking about when you say
that? What I mean by that, when I define personal truths, or sometimes I call them those unwanted feelings, and primarily, you know, fear and resentment, anger, our insecurities, you know, a feeling of rejection, abandonment. When we don't address them, they sort of they fester within us, and then what happens is they can come out in sometimes even explosive manners and very aggressive, usually controlling manners, you know, harmful to others and to ourselves. And so what I'm saying is like we need to address them. Like, for example, the main one of which, and I write a lot about in the book and on my blog, is fear, okay? You know, our fear, I have a poem I've written in the book. It's called, you know, Fiction's Bestseller, because fear is primarily the fictions that we create. It's the nightmares that we script for ourselves. And they can be extremely powerful and debilitating. And what we need to do is to be able to separate the objective facts, the reality, from these scripts that we make up. And there are different ways you can do that. And one way that I address in the book and in my speeches is, you know, a worst-case scenario exercise. And when I take someone through a worst-case scenario exercise, invariably it ends up where that thing that they fear the most just was never going to happen, you know. And they actually would end up at a place that wasn't as bad as they thought. And that's from my, you know, from my personal experience that I've learned. So if I can do that as a way of separating the nightmares from the reality, my fears are automatically diffused. They're diminished, and because they don't like being confronted, you know. May I read part of the poem?
Oh, yes. In fact, that was something I was going to share, but go do it.
Okay.
That's great.
When I was writing the book, you know, I wrote this after going through this very difficult period in my life, and it didn't start out to write a book. It was more my personal writings and then became my own self-help guide, so to speak. But fear was one of the big things, as well as control. And I sometimes would write poems to try to capture the essence of what I wanted to say, and this is the poem that I have in the beginning of the chapter on fear. A master of disguise with tentacles so long, flourishing like wild mint in the tepid soil of our minds. With us unbeknownst, this heavy silence so loud, it feeds our anxiety but nourishes only our doubts. Deceit's best lover, so blindfold brave, sharks our dreams, tons our creativity. Yet, truly a coward until unmasked, stare its stare, deflect its glare, strip it bare, reveal this thing fear for what it truly is, a wimp, hiding in our frail armor, parading as fiction's bestseller.
Very well said. Very well
and that,
said.
That says it. And that's, if you can do those things, it's going to cut through all this fear and anxiety. And not only will we stop controlling as much, but our whole life will open up for us. We can be able to really enjoy life's infinite possibilities.
And that is really what we need to be able to focus on so we can get things done. And I think on so many levels in life, there or within so many levels of life, there is that controlling factor, and there's an attitude, either my way or the highway. And you go, okay, I don't think I'm even going to take the highway. I think I'm going to hitchhike on the next truck that comes by that decides to cross the desert. Thank you very much. It's very hard. Because as human beings, we want to fit in, we want to be accepted, and that's something you bring out with the aspect of control, is that often people that are so controlling, they want to know that this is something that, you know, they're doing for your own good. By Jiminy and by George, that's the way it's going to be, but see, I've got your best interests at heart. And you go, I don't think so.
No, really. Most of the time, if they're really, truly honest, if they examine, there's also something that they want for themselves that they think the other person somehow can provide them.
Mm-hmm.
If only the other person would do what we want them to do and to be what they want them to be. You know, with my children, I've learned this so well, and it's sort of what you just said is, you know, it used to be my way is the only way, my way is the right way, my way is the only path. Mm-hmm. Well, I've learned from my 14-year-old daughter, Lana, who's when she was probably 12, when I was trying to insist that she do her homework the way I thought was best for her, you know, she said, Daddy, I'm different from you. I process things different than you do.
Mm-hmm.
I have my way of doing it. And, you know, she said this so simply that I couldn't help but just really take that in. She was so right. She is different than me. You know, our children come from us, but they're not us. They're not, especially in today's world that the kids are raised in. You know, these are different times, and they can listen. They can listen to loud rock music and still do their homework well and get good grades. You know, maybe I didn't do that, or my parents didn't allow me to do that, but that doesn't mean it's wrong for them.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a fascinating perspective.
Yeah, it's a perspective, and you know, and it's also being more humble. I think I don't think, Donna, that anybody has ever accused a controller of being too humble. I don't think so. I haven't heard, anyways. Because I think that's one thing controllers lack, quite honestly, is humility.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can change our attitudes and don't feel that we're so important, that our way is the best way, be more humble, show more humility, it opens things up so much. I have on my computer, I'm looking at it right now, and I have my same daughter, Lana, write it is, be aware of the beauty all around you.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware of the beauty all around you. And if you're too controlling, you can't be aware of it.
Oh, that's so true. That is so true.
I've learned that so many times over.
I have been aware of various individuals, and one's coming into my mind right now, that they were at an engagement and they were having a conversation at this particular event. And this other person was extremely arrogant. They were very arrogant. And
oh,
the
boy.
One says to the other, you're stupid. You don't know what you're talking about. And the other goes, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching this stuff, and I'm listening to it, and I thought I had two spoiled children in front of me.
Controllers, two big controllers.
And I just said, yeah, oh, yeah. I said, great. Go outside and do it out on the front yard if you want. Let the world know about it. But this is enough. This is just
about it. Oh, good for you.
It's amazing. And this happens with these individuals. And I just watch it and I find it. I think you're saying you need to be humble. You need to. And that doesn't mean that you're groveling. I really think that there is such an ignorance regarding that word. Be humble doesn't mean that you're a brainless worm.
Right.
It means that you have the understanding. This is my perception. It means that you have the understanding that there are various positions. And you can suggest, but sometimes we just need to shut up and listen.
Right. And we can a lot of times learn just from listening. You know, again, with our children, I talk about to listen attentively without feeling the need to advise or even suggest. Can be a very healing process for them, or for anybody. You know, it sort of lets people sort things out for themselves. And so I agree.
Are you there? Uh-oh. Something happened to Danny. Daniel Miller. I don't know. We're talking about losing control and finding serenity. It sounds as if something happened with his telephone and the signal was dropped. What I want to do is to, as we're trying to get him back on the line, mention his book is called Losing Control, Finding Serenity. And if you have people around you like this, by golly, you need to find out how to look at this with a whole different view instead of feeling like you need to be able to control them in some way. I really think the message that Daniel has in this book, Daniel Miller, is just wonderful, absolutely wonderful. We all encounter people who are incredibly arrogant, and they think they know what's best, and their way is the only way, and that's the way it is. But that isn't the only way in life. So you have to be able to figure out how you're going to be able to work with them and handle what it is that's going on in their space. Now, what I'm trying to do right now, and I know that Daniel, we've lost the connection with him, I want to give out his website. It's losingcontrolfindingserenity.com. That's losingcontrolfindingserenity.com. And if you deal with any people that are of this nature in work, he goes into working with kids and how you can work with people in your own working environment. And sometimes we have to leave those environments if someone is really, really very strong in that direction. So why not empower yourself? Why not empower yourself with the understanding of why this is so important to certain people? And if you're of that dispositioning, like Daniel Miller said he was in his 30s when he had big wake-up calls. And fortunately, he was able to listen. But this is a process. Sometimes we're taught to be that way. So if you feel like maybe this is something you're having an issue with, or if you know of someone that has an issue, why not get this book, Losing Control, Finding Serenity? Again, I'm sorry that we lost Daniel.
I'm here now. I don't know what happened exactly.
Oh, I don't either. Oh,
I was just
goodness.
Saying something about looking for others to fulfill our own needs versus filling our own, and then I'm not sure when I lost you there.
I have no idea.
But I'm back.
Oh, well, I'm so glad. My goodness. Well, we have a couple of minutes here. I wanted to, and I've been giving out your website, losingcontrolfindingserenity.com. Danny, I know we're just about out of time here, but I wanted to ask you, what would you want to leave as a thought with my listeners today that you would like for them to carry around as an insight?
I would like to leave them thought to at least to try to loosen the reins in different parts of their lives and just try just a little bit to give up control and then take note of what follows. So, for example, with your children, as I mentioned earlier, try listening to them without necessarily advising them, letting them have the consequences of their own actions or own mistakes, and maybe their creative endeavors. Enjoy the process rather than trying to overthink something. So, in other words, to just try this letting go of control in different parts of your life, and take note of how it seems to open the doors that maybe you see things that you didn't see before, and you don't need to have the wake-up call that I had to change your life in a significant way.
Well, Danny,
I would like to say one thing. I have to say, if someone does want to buy the book, they could get it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or through my website.
Absolutely. Losing Control, Finding Serenity, How the Need to Control Hurts Us and How to Let It Go. Well, I'm so glad you decided to put this into print because I think it's going to help a lot of people. Daniel Miller is his proper name. I call him Danny.
Please,
I'm so
Danny,
delightful.
Please.
It's so delightful having you as a guest today. I wish you continued success. And
thank you, Donna.
I appreciate what you were able to share with us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you for your nice questions. I appreciate that. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. That was Danny Miller. Losing Control, Finding Serenity. We're taking a break. Don't forget his website, losingcontrolfindingserenity.com. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, 888-815-9756, if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And all you have to do is give me your first name or initial. That's right. That's all you need to do. And, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then let me tell you what I perceive. I wanted to share another poem out of Danny's book that I really like. He has a chapter on what he calls the wave, and it's really all about going with the flow. And this is how it reads. Obsessed with control, we can't let go, but shorten life's list the more we resist. Relinquish, no longer diminish, let things be, begin to feel free. To travel this path, use its new math, accept and allow, even meow. Look to the waves, follow their sways, cresting in the wind, nature's magic within. Sometimes in tandem, always random release, feel the peace. Life's rhythm of truth, lost in youth, follows no pattern yet, brightens life's lantern. Danny Miller. His book is filled with a lot of wisdom and a lot of insight, and it was just delightful having him as a guest. And what I wanted to share with you is we do have a special guest tomorrow. My guest that was scheduled for tomorrow, he couldn't make it. He's in New York, and something came up, and he couldn't meet the time frame that we have, so we've rebooked him for next month. But we are going to be talking about how changing the world on a Tuesday night is possible. Tammy DeVille is going to be my guest, and I think you're going to find this very interesting. It is about nonprofits. It's about people who are making a difference in life and doing it because they want to do it. A very, very good batch of information. And then we're going to be talking with Joe on Friday about Yubby. Yes, that was Joe's nickname when he was growing up. It was given to him by classmates because he was bullied. And as an adult, he works with young people to help them deal with an issue that comes with every generation, but it's how you handle it that makes a difference. So we've got some real good shows coming up this week. And the next week, on Monday, John Emlyn is going to be my guest. We're going to be playing some music from his CD. John is a classical music composer, and we're going to be playing some of his music, and he's going to be telling us about what it takes to become a composer and how he, as a scientist, ended up becoming exactly that himself. And then we're going to be talking next Tuesday with Queen Dee's recipe book. If you like whimsical information and ideas and concepts, I think Cindy McGonigal is going to capture your heart and your imagination. This is a woman who is a psychic, but she's also got this delightful publication that she has put out about fairies and recipes and all kinds of fun things. So we've got that coming up for the rest of this month, so I wanted to let you know about it. And just remember, you can always find out about upcoming shows, the guests that are going to be on, and that is happening right on the BBS radio website. You can go to the show information button right by my show listing, and you can find out about those people that will be coming on the air. Well, I wanted to share something with you regarding herbs. They almost any pharmaceutical item comes from a natural element. even though it's made synthetically, the chemistry that is in nature is what we work with. And I'm sure you've all seen this wonderful little item called a star anise. Now, it's a pod as well as seed, and it's cultivated in tropical and subtropical environments in shady to partially shady environments. And it's grown mainly in China and Vietnam. And you'll see it, and it's dried, but it looks just like a flower. It's very pretty. Now, it has special properties to it. It's antibacterial, it is antispasmodic, it's antiviral, it's carminative, it's diuretic, it's an expectorant. I mean, it's just got so many assets to it. As often your herbs do, it can be used in more than one application. And it's got a powerful flavor to it. In fact, there is a liqueur that has been enjoyed in the Middle East for years. It's called anise, and it really has sort of a licorice type of a flavor. But you have this that has been used for generations by different people. And, in fact, people that like to use it in a soup or a stew, all you need to do is use one because it is just so very strong with its flavor. It has what seems to be this licorice, clove-like spiciness to it. And it's very good to relieve abdominal cramping. If people are burping excessively, they're bloating, they have gas, indigestion, stomach aches, this is the herb that you use. Now, here is a recipe that a wonderful herbalist, her name is Cami McBride, she has been on my show. She said, if you have problems with gas and bloating after meals, and a lot of people do, especially as they get older, and that's because your digestive enzymes internally are decreasing in their potency, so you need to help the body. Well, here is a recipe that she has that I think is a really good one. You take equal parts of powdered ginger, black pepper, and star anise. Sounds strange? We're not finished with the recipe yet. What you do, you can make it so that it is all ground up. You could use your coffee grinder if you wanted to grind it all together and blend it. And, oh, by the way, if you want to clean out your grinder after you've used an herb and you say, oh, I can't use this again, all you have to do is take some bread, put it in your grinder, and it'll remove all of the flavors of anything you've ground in it. But what you can do is you can put it in a salt or pepper shaker, and you can sprinkle it onto foods for flavoring, or you can put it in some honey and make a honey mixture. You can also use this in your cooking. Now, what happens when you do it? The star anise activates digestive enzymes if you have heavy foods. For some people, it's pizza. It just seems to sit like lead in their stomach. Or maybe you have got a real greasy meal that your stomach just isn't happy with. It really helps the digestive system absorb fats and meats of different types, and it helps your digestion to be more proactive rather than being sluggish. And so many times people say, oh, well, I'll take something like Tums, or I'll do this, that, or the other. And one of the factors that has contributed, apparently, to an indigestion process is antibiotics. When people are given heavy doses of antibiotics, it really affects the digestive system. It kills off a lot of the good bacteria. So whenever you add something like star anise, and there are some other items too you can check into, you can find out what works for you. But I just thought I would share that with you, because when you utilize these herbs, when you're eating and when your system is processing, it enables the extraction of nutrients from your food. And what does that do? Well, your body, when it gets more nutrients, the right kind of nutrients, it's healthier. Your cells are stronger. Your immune system is stronger. And you're going to be, you know, you're going to feel a lot better. So those are just a few tips that I thought you might enjoy knowing about, because everybody, every once in a while, gets an upset tummy. And it's something that I think we can prevent if we're proactive. And sometimes we enjoy certain foods, but our digestive system just doesn't work well with it anymore. And something like that may enable you to enjoy certain things and feel better about it. Another thing that I really like, and I've recommended this to a lot of people, and I learned this, believe it or not, from a physician who had found that this was very useful for his patients that had had their gallbladders removed, and that is papaya enzymes. If you know of anyone that has had their gallbladder removed, they don't have the processing in their body system to deal with fats and certain kinds of foods very well. So what you do, you just chew up the enzymes, and that helps the body deal with it very well. Came from a doctor. Really good information. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. When I come back, I'm going to tell the story about a grandma's call to duty. Yes, I'm going to talk to you about that. I started it yesterday. I ran out of time, but I'm going to share the whole story with you today. It's the story of a woman and how she managed to change her life and live her life with more passion and purpose in a very special way. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I do want to announce there are a couple of events that I'm going to be talking about starting next week. It's coming up in June, where I'm going to be speaking and teaching a class. It is going to be in the Pacific Northwest, and I'll be giving you all of those details. It also will be coming out in my newsletter. And by the way, if you have an interest in getting the monthly newsletter, all you have to do is send me an email. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com, and I'll be glad to put you on the list, and you'll get it every month. It's got recipes, all kinds of good things in it. If you were a grandmother, like Debbie Nichols, you might find yourself having to change your life for a very special reason. Now, Debbie's daughter was a single mom. She had two beautiful little girls, and she was in the Air Force. Well, the day came when she was deployed to Afghanistan. And she asked her mom and dad if they would take her children and watch over them while she was gone. And, of course, that means changing your life, doesn't it? You have your grandkids coming into your home. You're going to have to make sure that, just like you do with any child, you're going to have to make sure their clothes are clean. They're going to have to get off to school. They're going to be really creating a totally new environment in your life. Well, Debbie said she really was happy about that. In fact, she was able to, because her children had moved out, she was able to take two rooms in her house and make them up into special rooms for the girls. So the girls had their own room. And it was sort of unsettling for just a little bit of time, not for too long a time, but a little bit of time, because the girls had never had a room of their own before. Well, at Grandma's house, they were able to do it. And they both knew, they both were young children, they both knew that their mom was going to be going overseas. In fact, mom had made sure that the little girls each had a necklace with her picture inside of it, so they could look at her picture every day and know that she was thinking of them. And she said, when you kiss these hearts, that are filled with my picture every night, just know that it's like kissing mom. It's, I will be with you, and I'll be thinking about you all the time. Well, the first night that the girls were tucked into bed by Grandma Debbie, they found that they were feeling a little confused. In fact, the youngest one, she asked her grandmother, should I call you Mommy? Well, Debbie was just stunned, and she said, no, I'm your grandma, and that's all you need to remember. You don't need to worry about calling me Mommy. Your mommy's overseas, but she'll be coming home. And she said it totally changed her positioning as a grandmother, because grandmas always have said, it's wonderful to be a grandmother because your grandchildren are at some other place. You can spoil them, you can love them, you can support them, and then you can walk away and go home. Well, that wasn't the case. She was going to, like I said, have to make sure that they were in bed. She would have to discipline them. She'd have to be the surrogate mother. And it also meant the girls had to go to a new school. And she took them to the new school, and she was very supportive of them. And the girls were anxious, of course. In fact, one of them cried because she said, I don't know, maybe nobody's going to like me. Well, the girls' names were Ivy and Bailey. Well, the girls had, as it turned out, a very good first day at school, and they ended up settling into the daily routines quite nicely. And you know what? She found that she was going through the same stuff she had gone through with her own daughter and her own family when they were growing up. And the girls challenged her in many ways, but she just said before she knew it, she was right in the role just like she had done for so many years. And she said, we couldn't always hear from my daughter because internet service just was very sporadic. But she managed to send things to her daughter so she would feel like she wasn't losing touch with her girls. She'd send her information about how the girls were doing in school and take pictures. And then 5 months after the girls had moved in to their grandma's house, they got the news that mom was coming home. They were so thrilled. And her daughter was so grateful because she had known the peace of mind that her children were in an environment that was safe and was full of love and were really going to take very good care of her girls. And she said, it's so nice. I'm so glad my daughter's back home because now I can go back into the role of grandma I really want to do, and that is to be able to love them, to spoil them, and not have to worry about everyday things. But she found that she was not the only grandmother that had taken on this job, that because of the various military activities, a lot of other moms and dads that are now grandmas and grandpas were doing the same thing. And so she's put out a book called Deployed, Grandparents Being Parents. She said, when we had these two little girls living with us, it was the biggest challenge of our lives, but also the most rewarding. And because of it, our family is really closer than it was before this occurred. Challenges come up. Changes come up. Not everybody is going to be able to do what Debbie did. But so many grandparents in today's world are doing that very thing. And when you think about history, go back a little bit in history, you'll find grandparents were doing that even back in the good old days. Why? Because the younger members of the family had to be out in the fields. They had to be out working. They could not stay at home with their children. Very interesting cycle, the way things move around, come around. And I would say hats off to the Debbie Nichols of life, because I think it's wonderful that you were open and receptive and able to take on that responsibility. My hats off to you. Donna Sebo here, and I wanted to share one other thing with you. If you, like me, have been watching a lot of the disasters that have been going on throughout the United States, it's just heartbreaking. People with tornadoes coming through so many parts of the country, the devastation that's being left in their wake, it's absolutely mind-boggling. And I think that it's important to know about very important organizations like Hope Coalition America. And I received some information on this. And if anyone listening to this program knows of anyone that is going through this trauma and needs help, they might want to contact Operation Hope regarding your housing options and what you can do. And this came from someone that I know that is very much involved with FEMA and in working in emergency situations in the United States. Now, I know we're running out of time here, so I'm going to be sure to give you more information about this because it is really big in our country right now, so people need as much help as they can get. So I will be sharing this with you, and you can go to the Mortgage Hope Crisis Hotline, but again, tomorrow I will give you some more details on this so that you will have the information to share. And the website is Operation Hope. I'll give that out to you. And I'm closing out right now saying, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thank you so much for being with me today. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Donna Sebel. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.